Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Radio with your host, Joe Novella. I usually have my co-host, Steve Pallas, with me as well, but he is in Cairns this week at the Parks and Leisure Conference, so you have the pleasure of my company today, and we've got a fantastic show for you. We've got some great guests and some great topics to talk about in the world of grassroots sport, including the Secretary of the Toorak Bowls Club, Byron Coonerty, and we're also going to talk about what our responsibilities are as parents when it comes to our kids playing grassroots sport. So strap yourselves in, and when we come back, we'll be presenting you with the best content from the world of grassroots sport. You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pallas and Joe Novella, another Sports Community digital production, courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au. Okay, as mentioned at the top of the show, we got a very special guest with us today on Sports Community Radio. His name is Byron Coonerty, and he is the Secretary of the Toorak Bowls Club. Welcome to Sports Community Radio, Byron.
Thanks very much, Joe. Thanks for having me.
No, it's my pleasure. Now, you recently went through some training that Sports Community put on for bowls clubs in conjunction with Bowls Vic, and I just want to get your experience of the training, starting off with what did you know about the training? Did you know anything about the training before you went along?
Oh, look, I didn't know a lot of the specifics apart from the information that was given to us from Bowls Victoria on the website, kind of outlining the schedule of what sort of each week's theme was. In my role, my paid job, not the unpaid one at the club, I'm actually a student support manager at Swinburne University. So I do have a bit of management training and experience in sort of the education and corporate world. So I thought I knew a few things already, but actually I did pick up a lot of new knowledge over the 6 weeks of the training program.
Wow, that's fantastic. So just going on with that point a little bit, What were your expectations going in, given that you do come from an academic background? Were they fairly open, or did you... Because we do talk to a lot of people, and I know myself going into some courses, I often think to myself, well, what am I actually going to get out of this? Is it going to help me in any way? And sometimes the doors close before you even get in there. So, you know, did you have any expectations going in as to what you might get out of it?
Look, I had some sort of ideas, and and you're right, being in the education industry, I go to a lot of these training sessions and HR seminars, and actually I run a few myself as well, so you do sometimes think, oh, it's going to be the same old thing rehashed, but I always try to go in with the mindset that, well, if I know 80% of it already, but if I can learn another 20% that I didn't know, then it's still going to be successful for me. So, you know, generally speaking, I do approach these things with a fairly open mind. And, like I said just previously, I did pick up a lot of new information. And I think it really helped me to look at my club from an external perspective that perhaps I hadn't done in that way before.
So, focusing on the sessions themselves,
yeah.
How did you find the actual sessions? Did you find them, for example, were they planned out well? Were they informative, interactive? Was the right kind of content? And the reason I'm really interested in your opinion, not only because you are, you're at the coalface with the Bowls Club at Toorak, but you're also coming from that education background. This would be really insightful. So how did you find the sessions themselves?
Look, they were very well organised, and Steve Pallas, who runs them, has a lot of experience in amateur sport, and, you know, previously he was CEO of the Mornington Football League, so it really helped, I think, having someone deliver it who wasn't just a HR talking head type, a guy who'd actually been there, you know, played cricket for years. So
not very well, I might add.
Well, not according to him, but anyway. although he did tell us he was a much better cricketer than he was a footballer. So we'll leave it at that. But, you know, Steve's experience obviously shone through in what he was able to impart, sort of speaking to us. But overall, it was very well organised. One of the things that, you know, and I said to Steve about this also, is there is so much to be gained from getting the participants, i.e. the representatives from the various clubs, talking to each other.
Yes.
And I think that that's a little bit of a two-part strategy, in that it's slightly reassuring to think, oh, wow, all the problems that we have at our club, that club has them too.
Yes.
So, and it does make you feel like, well, I'm not the only one. We're not the only club who faces these sorts of challenges. So there's that element of it, but there's also the element of you can gain so much more knowledge by sharing, because, again, other people at the coalface. And one of the things that I really got out of it is that bowling clubs in particular, you need to view other clubs as partners in promoting your sport. I mean, we play against each other on a weekly basis on the green, and yes, we compete very hard, and I can assure you Toorak likes to compete and we like to win. But off the green, we should really look at how we can work together, not to just make my club bigger than yours, but how can clubs, sort of even in an area, work together to get combined growth right across. It's a difficult thing, but I think the state of our sport really demands it.
Yeah, and talking about the other participants in the classroom, did you get the feeling that the others were also as open-minded as you, or was there a sense of some of the participants being there under, you know, sufferance?
A duress, yeah. Look, I would say for the most part, everyone who was there, and it is a commitment to give up, you know, 3 hours of, you know, each week for 6 weeks continuously. I would say that my feeling was that the vast majority of participants were there because they really wanted to learn. They wanted to know how to, you know, different ways to improve their club, different ways of thinking. There were probably a couple who might have been dragged along, but again, my feeling, my experience during the sessions was that even those who may have come in a little bit cynical gained something out of it by the end.
And what about for yourself, personally? How has the training impacted on you and what you do around your club? Has it had a positive impact?
Oh, absolutely. And this is probably a key point too, that, you know, any type of training like this is only really of value if you put something into place afterwards. I mean, you've got to have that takeaway value, but you've then got to follow through. And, you know, that's where a lot of us in all sort of walks of life can fall down, is in that following through. I always say, yeah, I know everything I need to do, I just need to do it. But we have made some really concrete sort of steps from knowledge that we got from the sessions. And it might have been stuff that we already kind of knew, but by going to the sessions, it also inspired us and motivated us to get off our butts and do it. And, you know, one was creating a new Facebook page for our club. We're going back through the last sort of 4 years of members, both full and social, in order to create an email mail out list and things like that. Yes, yeah, so we have definitely put some of those things into place almost immediately, and, you know, over the next couple of years, because things do take time, we certainly hope to put a lot more of the ideas we gained from the sessions into place.
Wow, that is absolutely fantastic feedback. Now, one of the things about bowls in particular is that when you study the demographics of the players, and we know that it's changing, it does tend to be more on the mature side of things.
True.
And that can mean that people are a little bit stuck in their ways because they've been doing it for so long in a certain manner. Do you get the feeling that the bowls community is ready to embrace some of this, these changes and these different ways of thinking that is espoused in this training program?
Yeah, I do. And I think that, you know, bowls as a sport overall has to look at itself. I just got the draw yesterday, came out for the new Saturday pennant season, and I've already noticed that across a few divisions where, you know, we've lost teams, where there are sections, you know, divisions that might have had 10 sections suddenly now down to 8 and so forth. So overall, I think we do. And yes, it can be harder to sort of facilitate and initiate that change when you're dealing with an older demographic. But you do find that if things are explained properly and if people can see the actual benefit for their club of maybe changing the way that you do a certain, you know, element or activity in your club for the benefit of the club, that yep. they will get on board. And I also just want to say this. I think one of the important things, you know, one of the sort of catchphrases I got from Steve out of those sessions was, you don't have to force change on your existing members, but you may need to change some of the things in your club for your future members. And I thought that was a really important thing. Like, I don't expect a guy who's 86 years old and, you know, doesn't even carry a mobile phone to suddenly become a whiz on Facebook and social media. Of course, we're going to continue to use the old-fashioned methods, you know, a mailed letter or a phone call rather than text message or an email. But, you know, over time, people will come around if it's communicated well enough to them.
Yeah, that is a really great point. And do you notice yourself at Toorak, are you able to get some new blood into the club? Have you seen a few changes with a different market or different demographic that's being attracted to the sport?
Well, actually, Toorak's a little bit unique in some ways. We're only a fairly small club. I like to think we punch above our weight, both on the green and maybe off it. But we've always had a fairly youthful demographic at Toorak. I'm only 42, and I started bowling when I was in my early 20s. I started playing pennant, and I was one of the very few young guys at that stage to be out there playing pennant regularly. So for us, it's not that big a jump. I think maybe, and I mean this with all respect, some of the sort of middle suburb belt clubs and maybe some of the outer suburban clubs are starting to feel that demographic change now, whereas the inner city clubs, we kind of went through those issues with, you know, members dying off and no youth coming through. We went through that kind of 20 years ago and through various things like barefoot bowling and the Crackjack movie, obviously, and you know, bowls becoming kind of trendy and younger people just discovering, hey, there's a space down there and they've got a bar and they've got a green and you can go there and have fun. We kind of went through that 20 years ago. I think some of the other clubs in sort of, you know, that middle band of Melbourne suburbs and then moving to the outer suburbs probably are feeling it more than us. So from that perspective, we've always been, you know, slightly progressive in the demographic of our actual members, but we could still build on it and grow it more.
Well, you guys sound fantastic. Is there any like tips or advice that you could pass on to some of the and we've got clubs from all over Australia listening to this podcast. Yep. Any tips in that along those lines in terms of attracting a new membership demographic to their club?
Look, one of the things I think you've got to do is diversify. And I'm speaking probably from a Victorian bowlers and a Victorian pennant bowlers perspective. In Victoria, we tend to view Saturday pennant for the men's or now the amalgamated competition or the Tuesday pennant for what was traditionally the ladies' pennant day. We tend to view them as the be-all and end-all of what your club is and what your club's health can be measured by. I don't think that's probably as apparent in New South Wales and Queensland bowling, at least. I'm not so familiar with Western Australia, Tasmania and South Australian bowling. But what I say is you need to kind of diversify. Now, we only have two sides currently entered in the Saturday pennant. But over the last couple of years, we've actually put a site into a Wednesday night competition, the Bowls World Inner City Night Pennant, which is a new format. Rather than playing fours in a traditional 21-end game, it's two games of 12 ends. Is it 12 or 10? I forget now. With two bowl triples, and then you swap over. So it's a different way. It's a faster game, and through that, we've actually picked up about 8 new members who can't play Saturdays because they're actually younger than me. They're in their 30s, and they go play golf and do other things on a Saturday. So they're not able to commit to Saturdays, at least not at this stage, but they love playing Wednesday nights. So, and also, we entered into a similar competition, a winter pennant competition in the same format. And again, we've picked up a couple of new members, and we won a premiership.
Wow.
Out of it. Now, only small things, but upon those small things, it builds. And that's what I mean by diversify. You've got to think about your club not just in terms of whatever your regular flagship competition is. Think about the other competitions that are available. And again, probably people who bowl in Queensland and New South Wales are more aligned with that style of thinking than us Victorians. And just one final point on it. Also, we've been very successful with running a pool team in our winter months because we don't have a winter green, so there's not any bowling activity for about 3.5 months of the year. So to help fill that void, to get more participation in our club and keep the bar turning over, we opened up about the use of our club rooms for a local pool team, and that's been a great success.
Wow, that's fantastic. Some really, really great advice. Finally, Byron, I just want to get your, I want to ask you, would you recommend the sports community training for all our bowls clubs that are out there listening at the moment? Is it something that you'd recommend them to participate in?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, when I originally put it to the committee, everyone was a little bit sceptical. Oh, what do you want to do that for? And what do you want to spend $300 on that for? But I put it to them this way. I said that the initial outlay of that investment, you will, through the knowledge that you gain, and again, if you're able to transfer that knowledge gained into an action, a follow through, you will gain back from that initial outlay much more in the long run. And that's how you got to think.
Byron Coonerty, Secretary of the Toorak Bowls Club, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Many thanks for your time and your wisdom. Thanks, mate.
No problem at all, Joe. Thank you.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Joe Novella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, and there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Okay, you're with Joe Novella here on Sports Community Radio. My regular co-host Steve Pallas is busy sunning himself in Cairns at the Parks and Leisure Conference. I'm sure he's doing some work up there, but I bet he's also having a bit of relaxation time as well. And he deserves it because he's a very hard-working man, is our Steve Pallas. Now, the subject that I want to cover today in our podcast is the responsibilities that we as parents have for our kids when they're playing sport. This is often a very controversial discussion, and over my 40 years of being involved with grassroots sport, I've had many and varying discussions and debates over what is wrong and what is right, and often people have very, very differing views on what a parent's responsibility is for their kids when it comes to sport. And look, not everybody is going to agree with everything that's said or mentioned today, but over my experience in the 40 years that I've been involved in grassroots sport and in the taking of courses and being involved in the sports industry, these are the following is what rings true according to my experience. And the first of those responsibilities for us as parents is really quite a simple one, and that is to make sure that that the kids are well rested before they play their sport. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of you out there going, well, we try, and it is a difficult task to get kids to go to sleep on demand. In fact, it's probably impossible. And it is often hard to get them into bed as well. But if you can train them and get the messaging right and make sure that every Friday night or whatever night it is before they play sport, they understand that it's sport day tomorrow and that they need to get their rest, at least you're in with half a chance. The second thing is when they get up of a morning is to make sure that they are nourished. So a good breakfast before they play their sport, as well as lots of hydration, so lots of water, and making sure that they take the water with them as well when they're on their way to their sport. So nourishment is a very, very key part to play in the kids' enjoyment of their sport, and try and keep away from the really sugary, junk foody type breakfasts. There's a lot of literature out there now which talks about the right kind of things that we should be feeding our kids. Fruit is good, and wholemeal cereals. Stay away from the sugar and plenty of hydration. So make sure they're rested, well nourished, and also get them there on time. Get them to your sport or their sport on time. And by on time, I don't mean 3 seconds before the whistle blows or the bounce down or the ball up or the tip off. Get them there when the coach asks them to, so they can participate in a team talk or a warm up, whatever they need to do pre-game. So that's a very important responsibility for parents, is to make sure that they're getting their kids to the sports on time. Okay, the next one is to make sure that they have the right gear. Now, there's nothing worse than children trying to play sport when they just haven't got the right gear to do it. And that doesn't mean going out and buying the top of the line equipment. It means just getting the fundamental things right at the price point that you can afford. So if they're playing soccer, for example, make sure they've got shin pads and the boots and the proper shorts and socks. Otherwise, it could be embarrassing, and also prevent the child from doing his or her best because they just don't have the right equipment. So another important responsibility for parents is to make sure they have the right gear when they go and play. Another one that a lot of parents overlook, in my experience, is to stay and watch them play. Now, it's not always possible. There's a lot of priorities that weigh on parents in modern-day life, work, other commitments. There might be 3 or 4 children that need to be bussed around to different sports. So, it's not always possible to stay and watch your kids play. But if you can, stay and watch them play, because it's important to them. It's important that you are supporting them in that way. Okay. The other important thing is to support them whether they win or lose. Whether they win or lose, support them. Don't come down hard on them if they haven't won. And don't go over the top if they've won. Support them. Let them know that they've got your support, whatever happened on the field of play. And that also comes down to understanding their objectives. So one of the things that parents don't do when it comes to their kids and sport is understand what it is that their child wants to get out of their particular sport. Some children want to go along and they just want to play with their friends. Play with their mates. Some just want to get out. Some want to compete They've got that innate competitive drive. Some want to do the best that they can, and some don't want to play at all. So understand what it is that is driving your child. And if you do, then you'll be in a much better position to support them. If you understand that they just want to have go and have a kick, then, you know, you go and watch them have a kick. It's not about winning and losing. It's about, you know, just participating. If they want to get out and do the best that they can, utilize the most of the assets that they have, then you may look at providing some extra training for them. You might encourage them to train. You might draw on to train when outside of official training sessions, I should say. You might draw on some of your own personal experience. You may seek to enroll them in advanced training camps, for example. You know, if you understand what your child's objectives are, then you're in a much better place to support them. And ask them as well how you can support them. You know, one thing parents don't do is ask how they can support their child. You know, a parent might go along and watch their child play and do all the right things, you know, feed them, water them, provide the right equipment, and then start screaming out from the sidelines and clapping and being the loudest parent on the park and completely embarrassing their child. So, you know, have a chat to your child and see whether they want you to, you know, how they would like you to support them. And that might mean just coming along and picking them up. It might mean a number of different things, but definitely ask your child how you can do that. The next is to leave as much of the coaching as you can to the coach. The coach is the one that's put up their hand to take responsibility, and there's nothing that undermines a coach more than parents coming up who don't want to commit to full-time coaching of the kids but are willing to have a snipe or are willing to tell the coach that they're not doing their job properly. It doesn't set a good example and for your kids. And it's just the wrong thing to do. So leave as much of the coaching as you possibly can to the coach. And also, don't reward unsportsmanlike behaviour. If your child is behaving like a real prat out there and doing it in a way that is unsportsmanlike, it's your responsibility as well as the coach's to pull them up, you know. If you can support the coach in doing that, well, then you should. But you can't let your child go out and act in an unsportsmanlike behaviour. That's part of our responsibility as parents, is to teach them the difference between right and wrong when it comes to sport. And also to not to be unrealistic about your child's your child's participation in sport. So, unfortunately, and this is my experience over a number of years, there are a lot of parents out there that are trying to achieve their own failed sporting ambitions through their kids. And you see it, unfortunately, every week. You still see it. You see the parents ranting and raving and the child just trying to slink off into a corner, because it's the parent that actually wants to hit certain targets and objectives, and it's not the child. So don't be unrealistic about what your child is wanting out of the sport, and don't try and live your sporting ambitions through your child. It's not your responsibility to do that. You're there to support your child and help them enjoy the day in whatever way they choose to do it, as long as it's within the rules of sport. The other thing that you can do is not to be swayed by opinion, especially from other parents. I hear it every week. A parent is pulling their child out of a team because they're going to another team that is apparently more competitive, or they're putting their child into a $5,000 a term sporting program, which is going to enable that child to make a state squad or a representative squad or play overseas or something along those lines. And people end up paying a lot of money to people with dubious credentials who are running academies and elite sporting programs and get no result. And all you're doing is heaping pressure on your kids to perform. So make sure you're not swayed by other parents who are, you know, talking about academies and coaches and elite programs. Understand what your kid, your child wants, and stick to your guns. And if the child is talented and wants it enough to play at an elite level, then they'll work their way through the system from whatever club that they've come from. There's endless amount of examples of kids that have started off at your local grassroots club and gone on to play elite sport without the need to be part of expensive training programs or elite academies. So don't get swayed by opinion of other parents, and check the credentials of any coaches that are involved with your kids. You know, working with children checks. It's your responsibility to make sure that the club has got that under control. Make sure that if you're going to take them to a training program, you check the credentials of the coach. If they say that they've, you know, coached at AFL level, or they've coached at an NBL club or those kind of claims, then check them out. You can do that on the internet these days. Now, one thing that you should make sure that you do, and apologies for the stuttering there while I was trying to formulate the words, is that if you do see other parents misbehaving, that it is your responsibility to report abusive behaviour from other parents or coaches. Don't leave it to others. We want our kids to play in a safe environment. If you see that happening, then go and speak to a club official and report that incident. Okay, so hopefully that's given you a really good feel for the parents, what we as parents have in terms of responsibilities for our kids when it comes to playing grassroots sport. And make sure that you put them into practice, because if you do, you're going to make your child's playing sport experience a lot more enjoyable for both them and for you. You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella, another Sports Community digital production, courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au. Okay, it's time again for one of our most requested and favourite segments on the Sports Community Radio Show, and that is our top 9 ways to do things at your sports club. And this week's top 9 ways are the top 9 ways to measure sponsorship value, Steve. And the number one way is to have jars for each sponsor's receipts.
Well, Joe, one of the big challenges for sponsors, for clubs, is to work out how they value their sponsorship. And as we've mentioned often on the show, sponsorship is by far and away the topic of most interest of our listeners and of those on our website and those in our training. If we have a training session on strategic planning, there'll be 10 people there. If we have a training session on sponsorship, there'll be 50. So sponsorship is a big topic, hot topic for clubs, and rightly so. So how do we measure it? Well, one of the easiest ways, and we heard, and I must admit, I apologised, I can't remember the club that I heard this from, but I thought it was absolutely brilliant. What they did was, for every one of their sponsors, they had a jar in the in the club rooms, Joe, and they had the name of the sponsor on the on each jar. And what they did was they encouraged their members to collect receipts from each of the sponsors where they spent money at. And then each week they'd write, people would come into the club rooms, write their name on the back of the receipts, put them in the appropriate jars. And each week the club would clear those receipts and work out who'd spent the most money with their sponsors that week, and then would give them a prize of some sort, whether it be a meal in the bistro or whatever the prize was, just an incentive. And they kept a running tally, so they knew exactly, or not exactly, but they had a really good idea of how much money was being spent each week at each of their different sponsors. And so then they'd just rock up to, say, the butcher at the end of the year, and they'd slap down, you know, $10,000 worth of receipts, Joe, and say, well, this is how much money our members have spent with you. So very, very simple sort of way of measuring sponsorship value, but very effective.
I must admit, when I read the first cab off the rank there and it said have receipts for your sponsorships in jars, I thought you'd finally left the planet, Chief.
Simple, Joe, but effective.
So you've come through again, because that is an absolutely brilliant way to measure sponsorship value. And whoever come up with that, kudos to them, and kudos to you for telling us all about it.
Yeah, my apologies, Joe. It's not my one, but I really wish I'd taken notice of who told me that, because it was just brilliant.
All right, what have we got next?
Well,
number two.
People think that they feel like they've got to create sales. But another great way of measuring the value of a sponsorship is to actually take your crowd to the sponsor, Joe. So what do I mean by that? There's a couple of easy, obvious ways. So if you've got a sponsor who's a pub, a restaurant, or a gym, then rather than just, you know, get your members to go higgledy-piggledy to that venue, then you make it a function of the club, that you take your whole club and your audience and your spectators and your members and their family and friends to the pub or to the restaurant to have a, you know, Beaconsfield Netball Club have an auction night at Giorgio's restaurant every year, a restaurant in Beaconsfield that's normally shut on a Tuesday night, Joe, but they open every year for this one particular event. So it's a win-win for both the club. Pubs are obvious ones. You can have presentation nights there and those sorts of things. But cinemas is another one where you can take your crowd and your audience and your members to the cinema to have a members' night every maybe two or three, four, five, six times a year. You know, if you've got an older demographic like bowls clubs or golf clubs or dragon boat racing clubs, then maybe that's a monthly event and potentially can even be a weekly event. So that's a good thing. But then we take it on the other side of the more active. You know, gyms are forever trying to find ways to get sports, people participating in sport, into their gym. So rather than just promoting the gyms and promoting the memberships and those sorts of things, maybe take your club to a gym and run a pre-season program at the gym.
Yep.
And that's a really, really, really easy way. It's not up to you to sell the gym membership. It's up to you to create the opportunity for the gym to sell their gym memberships. By you taking your club in there for a 4 or 5 week pre-season campaign, Joe, then that's a tremendous opportunity for them to build a relationship with your crew and sell their memberships. So that's a good one. And just finally, you know, the big ticket, the big white goods stores, the Harvey Normans of the world, and those sorts of organisations, they often don't sponsor clubs. But what they will do, Joe, is they'll have member nights. So again, same concept. You take your membership to, say, the Harvey Norman type Clive Peters, whatever the bulk electronic white goods, Dick Smith type store in your town. Promote it 6 or 8 weeks out. And then take all your members and your spectators and to the store, and then you'll get arrange to get a percentage of the sales for that night. And typically, what organisations like Harvey Norman do is that they will give tremendous discounts on the night, as well as give 10 to 15% of the sales back to the club. So
I think that's an absolutely brilliant strategy. I really do, because it's a win-win for everybody. And if they're giving discounts. Everybody needs white goods, or they need electronic equipment at some point. And they want to, people want to buy gifts, those kind of things, and you're demonstrating a commitment to your sponsor. Now, gone are the days where you can just go to someone and we'll say, look, give us $500 and we'll put a banner on the field for you.
Oh, well, those days aren't gone.
That might still happen.
But you can make a lot more money if you
absolutely. If you engage. Put a little bit of investment time into making some of these strategies happen, then you might find that not only do you make a little bit more money for your club, but the sponsors that you do attract become long-term sponsors, so they don't leave after a year because they don't, you know, they feel like they're getting some return on their investment. And that's a... Oh, I think that's one that's really, really good. Taking your crowd to your sponsor is one really good one out there.
Well, and you know what, Joe? It doesn't just have to be your crowd. This is where you can then join with other clubs.
And even more potent.
And leagues. So if you rock up, instead of it being a club level, but if you take it to a league level and get the whole league to bring all the clubs there to, you know, whichever sponsor it is. Let's just keep going with the Harvey Norman example. And we don't get a cent from Harvey Norman, Joe, so there's no cash for comment here. But
if you are listening, Harvey Norman, if you want to throw some money our way.
Yeah, www.sportscommunity.com.au about us for our contact details there, Joe. Yeah, very, very, very good point. But certainly, you know, imagine if you're the local, say, Harvey Norman in, you know, Mornington, where we live, and the Mornington Nepean Football League comes to you and say, I've got 32 teams, how about running a members' night?
Yes.
You know, they all spend 10 grand each. There's a couple, you know, 320 grand all done and dusted on one night's trading. It's the mathematics is not that hard.
So. Well, and just, you know, brainstorming this a little bit further, like there's a number of activities that most clubs go through, one of them being a end of season trip. So if you've got some kind of association with a hotel and you can promise them, you know, 15 rooms at the end of the year, that are going to be taken up by your team, I'm sure that you're going to attract some kind of sponsorship deal because you're taking your crowd to them. So well, it works really well.
Well, now that you've mentioned hotels and motels, one of our clear partners, Joe, is Choice Hotel Group. And they have a fantastic...
There you go.
A fantastic program where clubs can register and then any one of them... And they get a code and then any one of their members... Who then uses that code will get an immediate 15% discount on the room, but also 7% will immediately go to the club
for
almost a referral commission. So the days of putting the $500 sign up are not necessarily gone, but clubs can have the ability to generate so much more money now out of those same sponsors by creating real financial value. So I encourage all clubs to have a look at the Choice Sports program. Again, have a look at the Sports Community website, www.sportscommunity.com.au. Click on fundraising and then click down to the referral scheme tab, and you'll see a number of organisations that offer kind of referral commissions to clubs, which is really cool.
Yeah, now I know this one, the next one, number five, I think it is one that we go on about quite a bit, and it's one of those ones when you that someone tells you it, you don't think it's all that important, but when you sit back and think about it, this is a very powerful way for clubs to actually show some sponsorship value, and that's all about calls to action, isn't it, mate?
Calls to action. Let's talk about websites first.
Yep.
You know, so many websites that we see have sponsors' pages and they have sponsors' logos on them. But, you know, if you're on the local netball league website, you're not there to look for the sponsor. You're not there to, you're there to see netball and about netball. But instead of having just the logo, and it might be Brumby's Bakery, again, not one that's linked to us, the local baker. If you see the logo for the local baker, well, that's not really enough to let you click through, whether it be from the website or the email newsletter. But if that had a call to action on it, you know, the logo plus buy six rolls, get six rolls free, or buy six rolls and get 25 jam donuts for free, Joe, that'd get us in the door.
Absolutely.
You know, a call to action. So clubs need to start to educate their sponsors that they need to start to work the opportunity that they've got within your club. They don't, just putting a brand and a logo and a sign on the fence isn't necessarily enough to create financial value for them. They need to be coming to you, the club, with offers that are going to be attractive to your membership. give them reasons that your membership are going to leave your website to go to theirs. Give them reasons to go into your shop. So it could be you might have a local winery, like we've got 50 local wineries around here, Joe, that a number of them sponsor local sports teams. And, you know, instead of just having the logo of the winery, you know, buy six bottles of wine, get six 10% free.
10% off.
20% off. Let's upsell it a little bit, Joe. We want to create some value for our members here. We don't want to just, you know, just the stock standard 10%.
But that's why you're the finance man, right?
You know, we can see the difference, can't you? Absolutely. You know, a logo of a winery compared to, you know, a really good deal from a winery, that's going to make me walk in the door. That's going to make me walk a fair way. So that sort of things, that concept of call to action, not just using sponsors pages and branding and that sort of thing. Give me a reason to leave the website that I'm on to come to the sponsors page. Give me a reason to leave the netball and go to the bakery. Give me a reason to go to the bottle shop. Give me a reason to go to the local mechanic. Give me a reason to get there, and I'll be there, Joe, if it's good value.
Absolutely important. And by extension, that extends to the newsletter as well.
Well, it does. It's a newsletter, social media. It extends to real life, to digital life. You know, don't just tell me that XYZ accountant is the sponsor. Tell me that if I go there, they're going to do my tax return for half price.
Mm.
And that might include my last 4 years' tax returns, Joe, but that's a whole different discussion, which we probably shouldn't have on air. But
possibly not.
But you know, you can see the concept, can't you? And we need clubs need to be really strong and with their sponsors, because if the sponsors work with the clubs to create real value, then they're more likely to come back next year. So that whole call to action for websites, email, newsletters, and social media is really, really important.
And we still see, don't we, mate? We still see when we're on our travels around that there is still a large body of clubs that just have that static banner type. There's no click through and there's no sponsors offering. So, you know, without labouring the point too much, if you're a club out there, like Steve said, encourage your sponsors to come up with some deals and then make sure they're visible on your website and your newsletter and your social media. Next one.
This one gives me a little bit of a chuckle, this one, Joe. Direct sales at your club. So instead of bringing your club, your audience to the sponsor, bring your sponsor to the audience, right? And so, like, simple things like coffee carts and coffee machines and coffee vans. If you got the local cafe, get them to come to one of your major events. The longest queue at any event, apart from the ladies' toilet, the next longest queue is the coffee machine. So get the coffee cafe to come to you. And I'll give you, and I'll share a little anecdote from one of our training sessions. And it was one of the sponsors' training sessions, Joe. And there was a club that was very proud of the fact that they'd negotiated, you know, a couple of grand sponsorship plus a travel agent gave them a couple of grand plus put on a morning tea every quarter, once a quarter for their members. So their members would come, and this travel agent would come in and talk about some of the great holidays of the world, you know, Africa, Asia, through the glaciers of Canada and through the Rocky Mountains and those sorts of big tours, you know, cruises down the European rivers and those sorts of things. And the club loved it, right? And so every quarter, you know, and it wasn't just the members, but the club would get, you know, 50 or 60 people to each of those morning teas. And the travel agent loved it because she was selling, you know, 10 to 12 trips on these, yep, these major trips. And the club said, this is a fantastic win-win. And I said, oh, look, I don't want to judge, but I'm not sure that you're winning out of this. And the person looked at me and said, well, yeah, we are. They're giving us $2,000 cash and, you know, a couple of morning teas, four morning teas a year for 50 or 60 people. And I said, yeah, but do the sums. You've got 10, 12 people spending $15,000 four times a year. Yep. So you're spending upwards, your club and through your audience, you're spending upwards of $600,000 a year with that travel agent, and you're getting in return maybe $3,000. I said, I'm not seeing that that's necessarily a win-win. And the club said, yeah, the club could understand where I was coming from then, and have subsequently gone back to that travel agent, Joe, and renegotiated a much better deal. Because it was a win-win scenario. So direct sales at your club is fantastic. What does your audience buy anyway? Because this club's audience and they were spending a lot on they were going on holidays anyway. Mm. You know, so they were spending that money anyway. So that by the club kind of creating the conduit was creating the referral.
I think that applies for a lot of businesses too. We used to do it at my club with a real estate agent and also financial advice, where the agents would come in or financial planners would come in and they'd get access to the membership of the club to sell their products. And it was very, very successful.
Mm.
The agent would sell at least two or three houses a year or be part of buying real estate and win-win for both. Same kind of scenario. So a really powerful way of doing it.
Yeah, and Joe, the final way as we fly through the last of them is, create coupons that can be redeemed at the sponsors. So it's a little bit difficult for the club to know how many have been redeemed, but the sponsors will certainly know. And
yep.
And if there's enough coupons being redeemed, then the sponsors will be very open to ongoing sponsoring you on an ongoing sustainable basis. So there's eight different ways to measure sponsorship value or to create sponsorship value and to measure it that are not always obvious. So have a jar for your sponsors' receipts. Bring your sponsor to your club so the direct sales can be made there and then. Take your club to the sponsor. Have calls to action on your websites, your email newsletters, and your social media. There's lots of different referral schemes going at the moment where clubs can receive, like the Choice Sports Hotels referral scheme, which is fantastic. You mentioned one with real estate agents have often been giving clubs referrals. And the last point is create some coupons that your clubs can, your members can use to redeem discounts and benefits at your club sponsors, Joe.
Okay, we've come to that time again where we're going to have to wrap up the show, and we hope you enjoyed the show. Steve will be back with me next week, and hopefully he'll have a nice tan on him after being up in Cairns at the Parks and Leisure Conference. If you would like to download this podcast or play any of the previous podcasts, then visit our website, www.sportscommunity.com.au. You'll find them all there, as well as some other great content, news on grants, on how to raise funds, and lots of free resources for you to enable you to be the best volunteer that you can be for your grassroots sports club. So on behalf of me, Joe Novella, we hope you've enjoyed the show, and we look forward to bringing you the best content from the world of grassroots sports next week on Sports Community Radio.